Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 5 says, just as you cannot understand the path of the wind or the mystery of a tiny baby growing in its mother's womb, so you cannot understand the activity of God who does all things. Now, doesn't that annoy you sometimes? Not understanding what God is doing? I mean, sometimes it would be nice if he would let us in on the plan every once in a while. Some people don't like surprises, and some people have to know detail. The more detail, the better. Luck favors the prepared, and haven't we always been told that you should always have a plan and everyone on your team should know what that plan is? Imagine a football team with a coach who doesn't tell his quarterback what the play is so he can tell the rest of the team. That might be a game worth watching simply for the entertainment factor. I would pay good money to watch that game. The thing I have always struggled with when it comes to faith is what I don't know. And what I mean by that is I have faith that God can do anything. I absolutely believe that without question. But what I struggle with sometimes is whether or not he will. And it's the reason I entitled this message, That Thing About God. You know, in any relationship, whether it's husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, brother, sister, even relationships at work, someone you work with and next to all the time, or it's your boss or whatever, or your employees if you're the boss, I don't care who you are, how great a person you are, everybody has something about them, something that they do, some little quirk, if you will, or some characteristic, some part of their personality that somebody else doesn't really like. Doesn't mean that they dislike you as a person, just means that that particular thing about you, they don't really like. But that's normal. That's human. That's part of you know, life. It's part of what makes the world go around. If we all were exactly like each other, then we would actually all probably wind up hating each other. But the honest truth, if we're all going to be brutally honest with ourselves, I think we think the same thing about God. Now, we don't dislike God. It's not that we don't love God, but let's face it. This is a relationship that we are in with God, and in relationships, excuse me, there are things that we just don't like that much. Now, those are not deal breakers for the relationships, but nonetheless, they are things that we just don't like that much. And for me personally, this is that thing about God that I just don't like. Because he doesn't have to do anything he doesn't want to. And again, as I already said, I absolutely believe without question that God can do anything. But I don't know whether or not he will. Someone I love can be sick and in the hospital, and I can pray that God will heal them and let them recover. And I absolutely believe that he can do that. But what I don't know is whether or not he will. He may still allow that person I love to die, and that is what I struggle with. He can do all things, but he doesn't always, and I usually don't understand why. In my mind, of course, I see no reason why he can't answer my prayer with a yes. And so if he answers it with a no, sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it can feel like God has let me down. It can feel like I have been hurt by this God who was supposed to love me to no end, and yet he said no, and now I hurt. And sometimes I get angry. Yes, I said angry. And before you start shaking your head and scolding your radio, I would wager that you have probably been angry with God before too. And maybe for the same reason as me. That's not automatically sinful. Anger is a basic human emotion, just like happiness, sadness, feeling excited, or feeling scared. No one scolds us for feeling happy. No one scolds us for feeling sad or necessarily for even feeling scared. And yet when we get angry, we often get scolded for it. As if that is the one emotion that we should have been able to just turn off. As if that is the one emotion that we are not, as Christians particularly, allowed to experience. But it's not that simple. It's a basic human emotion, not inherently sinful in itself. What matters is what we do with it. To feel angry at something is normal, and it's not a conscious choice that we make. Things naturally make us happy, and naturally make us sad, and naturally make us angry. Anger is not a sin. What we do with it could be. And I said could. I did not say will be or is, because what we do with anger is not always sinful. If you feel angry at God, it's not a sin. It can, in fact, be a sign of a healthy relationship with Him. And sometimes when He says no, we feel angry because in our mind, there wasn't any real reason to say no, or to allow us to experience whatever it is that we did, and we feel that God could have prevented it. Now again, God in His majesty and His wisdom, you know, He sees far beyond what we can even begin to comprehend. And, you know, this is where trust and faith comes in, which we're going to look at in a little bit. But the point I'm making here is that when we see no reason for Him to say no, and yet He says no, it hurts sometimes, and it can anger us sometimes, because it just doesn't make any sense to us. What makes this whole God-person relationship thing a bit tricky and leaves us both with a disadvantage is the fact that we don't really have a whole lot in common. I mean, some couples can read each other's minds and anticipate each other's actions, but there's so much about God that we just don't know even after years of being together. Now, what we need to know about God, we learn from His Word. He gave us that. But that really only scratches the surface, if that. We know that He's holy and just and righteous, but the Bible really tells us what God wants from us in this relationship, what His expectations are, not so much of revealing Himself. And even the Bible itself says as much. If you look in the book of Romans at chapter 11 and verse 33, says, "Oh, how great are God's riches and wisdom and knowledge. How impossible it is for us to understand His decisions and His ways. For who can know the Lord's thoughts? Who knows enough to give Him advice?" We will never know during our time on earth all that much about God. Not really. What He's thinking, what He's doing, why He's doing, what He plans to do. And it can be frustrating when He says, "Just trust me, have faith," and then He goes into total radio silence. But if we knew all that we wanted to know, that would mean there is no faith, right? Because the very definition of faith means that there are things for which you lack proof, for which you don't actually know, you just believe. If you knew what God was doing and could see the outcome, you wouldn't have faith that God has everything under control. You would have insider knowledge, which, let's face it, is what we all probably would really like to have. I would also like to have a mansion on Malibu Beach, but I know that that's never going to happen, so we press on with the realities of life. And our reality is that God often does things we don't understand, and we often feel a little in the dark about His actions, and sometimes we struggle with that. For me, this is the thing about God that I really don't like, and what makes me struggle with faith. This is where I have one of those little faith moments, and maybe you do too. And what do I mean by little faith? Well, look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25. "That is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food and drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for your heavenly Father feeds them. And aren't you far more valuable to Him than they are? Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And why worry about your clothing? Look at the lilies of the field and how they grow. They don't work or make their clothing. Yet Solomon in all his glory was not dressed as beautifully as they are." And that's a lot of glory, by the way. Read about Solomon in the Old Testament. That was a lot of glory. And if God cares so wonderfully for wildflowers that are here today and thrown into the fire tomorrow, He will certainly care for you. Why do you have so little faith? The term little faith and related Greek terms are used 5 times in Matthew and once in Luke. The term refers to a specific event rather than ongoing and permanent failure. In Matthew, this is either due to a lack of knowledge on behalf of the disciples or to acting without faith in a particular situation. If someone always lacks faith, it would be described as unbelief rather than little faith. In the case of the disciples, their little faith is seen in what we read in chapter 6, where they do not seem to understand their value or God's providential protection. Elsewhere, they do not understand God's protection in the midst of physical danger, or they don't understand what Jesus meant when he spoke of yeast, and in one case, they were not able to cast out a demon. These are instances of failure to be consistent with a calling rather than having no faith whatsoever. You certainly can't deny that the disciples had faith. There is no doubt about that. But when it came to certain matters, they struggled sometimes with this little faith. The term faith reflects 2 ideas. Trust, which is personal reliance on the Lord, and belief, which is affirmation of what you feel to be true. Matthew's concern with little faith is about a lack of trust of Jesus in a specific situation, not a failure to have a basic belief in Jesus as Lord and Savior. Jesus wants us not only to believe in Him, but also to trust Him. And we all struggle with trust sometimes. It's not easy being told to keep moving forward, even when we can't see anything in front of us. Our instinct is to stop until we can see, but we have God saying, "Keep moving, I've got you," but we still can't see 2 inches in front of our face. Psalm 25. Verses 1 through 3, O Lord, I give my life to you. I trust in you, my God. Do not let me be disgraced, or let my enemies rejoice in my defeat. No one who trusts in you will ever be disgraced, but disgrace comes to those who try to deceive others. And Psalm 62, five through 8. Says, let all that I am wait quietly before God, for my hope is in Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress where I will not be shaken. My victory and honor come from God alone. He is my refuge, a rock where no enemy can reach me. O, my people, trust in Him at all times. Pour out your heart to Him, for God is our refuge. And by the way, David lacked the same thing in his relationship with God that we do. The inside scoop. He didn't really know how things would turn out. When Saul tried to kill him multiple times, when he was in danger from other enemies, and yet he still trusted in God to save him. Isaiah chapter 40. And verse 28, starting. Have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of His understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Those who trust in the Lord will find new strength and soar like eagles. You'll notice that it didn't say those who finally broke the encryption on God's mind and they can finally read all of His thoughts and motives and plans. It didn't say anything about that. It didn't say anything about finally having been able to find the key and we finally got into God's diary. It didn't say anything about that. Rather, it comes to those who do not have all the answers they want, but who have chosen to trust in the One who said that He would never leave them nor forsake them. It comes to those who chose to trust in the one who said, "You are worth far more than the lilies of the field, and look at how I care for them." Romans 8:28. Some of you listening to this may have already wondered why I didn't go to this one before. I'm about to tell you why, but I want to read it to you first. Romans 8:28, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them." Now, I'll be honest, sometimes when this verse is quoted, it makes me a little annoyed because sometimes it gets thrown out there a little too quick, in my opinion. As if this one verse should completely erase everything else that we have been feeling. A loved one dies, or a house is lost in a fire, or some other major event happens, and people are scared, they're hurt, they're angry, and all the preacher can think to say is this verse. And it can be spoken so callously sometimes, as if the simple usage of this verse should mean that the people just pick themselves up and move on with life with a smile on their face because God knows what is best and it all works out for good. Romans 8:28. Don't forget Romans 8:28. I didn't want to do that because I think it's important that we understand the human element in this. And the human element is that we all struggle, and to a degree, we all need to be allowed to struggle. That's why I didn't just throw Romans 8:28 out there right in the very beginning when I first started talking about not understanding why God didn't say yes. Romans 8:28, that's not the time when you want to start hearing about Romans 8:28. That's not the time when preachers or anybody else needs to start throwing Romans 8:28 in your face, is when you're starting to feel some pain and anger and doubt. We'll get to Romans 8:28, but we don't need to throw it in your face just yet. Because you deserve a chance to grieve. You deserve a chance to run through your emotions, to experience the doubt, to have the questions, to experience the fear, to experience the anger. It's the human element of life. We all deal with issues of life, and sometimes they get us down. They cause us fear. They cause us worry. And sometimes it is so incredibly hard to close our eyes and shout God's name and then just keep moving. There's nothing wrong with experiencing your struggle. And so I took you through the struggle first. I took you through the anger. I took you through the part of God that is hard to deal with sometimes. I took you through the moments of little faith because I think it's important that we are allowed to experience our emotions, even if those emotions are directed at God. Because your struggle is important and it should be given its proper attention, not dismissed with some ill-timed quoting of a verse, no matter how firmly I may believe it. However, I will end it here because it is true. You may not want to hear this verse at the beginning of your pain, and that's fine, but at some point, you do have to consider its truth. God does have it under control, even though he's probably being annoyingly vague, if not altogether mum, about the details. He does care so much about you and for you, and he loves you beyond what you can understand. Of all the things about him that we don't understand, perhaps the biggest one we can't understand is just how much he loves us. And I don't think he's ever really been vague on that. There may be a lot that he just hasn't told us and isn't even attempting to tell us, but one thing he has never tried to keep from us is how much he loves us. It was his love that started this relationship, and it is his love that will see it through. Good days and bad days, sickness and health, richer and poorer, till death brings us together.